Hello, I'm Richard Suchet, and this is the LBC Daily Debrief, the podcast that brings you the full story on the day's biggest news. And we start with this.
Their involvement in Yemen came at the request of the legitimate government of the Yemen. It is backed by the United Nations Security Council, and as such, we support it.
That's Theresa May, as you might have guessed, at Prime Minister's Questions today, explaining Saudi's involvement in Yemen and why she thinks we should retain our strong relationship with Saudi Arabia. That's as the Saudi Crown Prince arrives in the UK today to expected protests. The PM has said she'll challenge the Prince on Saudi Arabia's human rights record, but will that make any difference? Do you even believe her? Or is this all about business and money? We'll get into that in a moment. And we'll tell you more about the Cobra meeting that's been called today in response to an ex-Russian spy's highly suspicious illness. He and his daughter Yulia are still in a critical condition. Our political editor Theo Ashwood will give us the latest on that. Plus, we'll have the second part of LBC's exclusive investigation with the paedophile hunters Dark Justice. Now, Theresa May will challenge Saudi Arabia over its human rights record today as its crown prince jets into London this afternoon. Mohammed bin Salman will meet with the Prime Minister and the Queen during his trip. Saudi Arabia says he will use the trip to drum up business and trade, while the PM says her priorities lie with the country's human rights and involvement in the Yemeni conflict. But he's not exactly being welcomed with open arms. Jeremy Corbyn has said the UK should no longer be selling arms to Saudi, and hundreds of demonstrators will gather outside Downing Street this evening to protest against the visit. So what, if any, difference will this visit make? Joining me now is Michael Stevens, Middle East Research Fellow at RUSI, which is the Royal United Services Institute for Defence and Security Studies. Michael, thanks for joining us here on the LBC Daily Debrief. What is, do you think, the driving force, the main reason why we would want to welcome Mohammed bin Salman here? Is it something to do with the flotation of Aramco?
No, I think it's because he's the most powerful man in the Arab world. And he is in charge of a country which still has, I think, a significant role to play in not just the politics of the region, but also in global energy and oil price stability. And he seems to have no challenges to his rule. He's a young man and he's going to be here probably for the next 40 or 50 years. I don't see anybody moving him aside. So unless you want to not do business with the most powerful country in the Arab world, then, you know, you have to talk to him. And I think, you know, he is coming on the back of, you know, this proposed reform program, trying to say that Saudi Arabia is now a very different country under his leadership than it has been before. And some of the issues that we've had with the Saudis in the past about extremism and radicals traveling to Syria or the 9/11 attacks, he's taken care of. So there's a lot to talk about. And obviously, we have a relationship with Saudi that goes back not just 40, 50 years, but into the past century. And so with this young man in charge, I guess we need to see where he's going to take the country.
Yeah, I suppose saying that you've reformed and actually reforming are two different things. I mean, women are still second-class citizens there. I think execution rates there are higher than anywhere else.
I think Iran's more. I think Iran has more.
Is that right?
Yeah. Look, at the end of the day, yes, absolutely. We don't support the death penalty. Saudi Arabia does. There are, you know, detentions of human rights activists. And I'm afraid to say, look, these are things that you're going to have to bring up as Theresa May when you sit with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia and be honest about them. And I think this is the key now, is that, you know, this is a chance to get the relationship off on a basic setting whereby the Saudis understand that our relationship is not just about selling weapons or about, you know, supporting them in Yemen. It's about our concerns as the United Kingdom about how he wants to take the country. And yes, he's made some reforms. Yes, it's absolutely the case that women are, you know, better off now than they were perhaps 10, 15, 20 years ago. But nevertheless, you know, I think it's important that you put a stake in the ground. You say, this is not a carte blanche for you to do whatever you want, however you want it, because, you know, we're intimately tied into the future of your country as you are to us. So, you know, we do get a say in how that looks, and please do bear in mind what our concerns are. The difference, of course, is are we able to have any impact on those concerns? And I'm not sure is the answer.
Based on what's happened and what is happening in Yemen, is Mohammed bin Salman a war criminal? Potentially.
It's a difficult one to say. I think
because clearly, we are potentially welcoming a war criminal to this country, aren't we?
Well, I mean, we could say that about almost every leader that walks into our front door. But look, at the end of the day...
Well, you could say that Assad, wasn't a war criminal at the time that he came here. He may be now.
True, he wasn't. No, that's true. But the situation is this, is that the war is clearly going extremely badly and it needs to end. And I think that the thing here is that the Saudis aren't going to stop this just because, you know, people call him war criminal. They believe fundamentally that this is caused by Iran. Whether that's true or not is another matter, but they believe that that is the case. And they are not willing to stop the war until such time as they believe that the Iranians are out of Yemen. So I think, regardless of what we think from our side, the war is going to keep going. So we need to now get a plan in place for him to try and bring this war to an end. And frankly, it's turned into a humanitarian catastrophe. It is a little bit embarrassing for the United Kingdom to be associated with this war, to have high-end weapon systems being used in this war. And I think, you know, it's time now to try and bring this to an end. And I think as long as Mohammed bin Salman understands that we're not doing it because, you know, we have some agenda against him, but because we genuinely are concerned about the situation in Yemen, and we want to make sure that, you know, Saudi Arabia is also not getting itself into an endless war that will destabilize its own southern border, then I think we can make some progress. But it is difficult. There's no doubt about it. The Yemen conflict has not gone well.
No, Theresa May says that our relationship with Saudi is saving lives in Yemen. Do you buy that?
I think she was saying it was saving lives here. I think it was referring to our intelligence and security cooperation. So that has been proven. The Saudis have on numerous occasions, you know, shared intelligence with us about individuals trying to blow up aircraft or trying to commit harm against British targets. So I think that's what she was referring to. I don't think it was about Yemen.
And what do you make of Jeremy Corbyn saying, Jeremy Corbyn's position, he said that the UK should no longer be selling arms to Saudi. He will no doubt be supportive of the protests. Do you think it's easy for him because he's in opposition and everybody knows what he's about? But
yeah, I do. And I think that actually, I mean, I've said this myself a few times, if Jeremy Corbyn and Emily Thornberry were in government, would they be taking such a strong position now, being in opposition, as they would be if they were, you know, Prime Minister and Foreign Secretary of the UK? And my reasoning on this is that they wouldn't. I think that they would probably tamper that down. Look at what happened with Donald Trump. Donald Trump, during his campaign speeches, was slagging Saudi Arabia off left, right and centre. And what was the first country he then visited? It was Saudi Arabia. So even someone as acerbic and difficult...
Not sure Corbyn will like the comparison with Trump, but...
Well, you know, at the end of the day, they're both on the sort of far ends of the spectrum, regardless of where you look at it. So the truth is that the realities of power, I think, would hit Corbyn pretty hard. Now, look, here's the issue. There were legal, you know, investigations taken last year about the UK's defence relationship with Saudi Arabia, in which it was independently assessed by the High Court that the UK was legitimately selling weapons. So, you know, being that this country has an independent judiciary, the government actually can't get involved in that process. And the judicial review was that we were not selling weapons illegally. So if Mr. Corbyn wants that to happen and he claims that this is illegal, then, I mean, he'd have to then, you know, put another inquiry into place, and that inquiry would then have to determine the legality of it. But right now, technically speaking, the government is not doing anything illegal. So I think Corbyn would have a lot of work to do in order to then, you know, move that conversation on.
All right, Michael Stevens, thanks very much for joining us here on the LBC Daily Debrief. And Michael is the Middle East Research Fellow at RUSI, the Royal United Services Institute for Defence and Security Studies. Thanks very much for joining us. Now, coming up, we have the second and final part of our exclusive investigation with paedophile hunters Dark Justice. We'll hear what happens when a suspect is confronted. But first, we heard yesterday the shocking story of the former Russian spy Sergei Skripal, who, along with his daughter, remained critically ill in hospital. Scotland Yard has announced that counter-terrorism police would now take charge of the investigation, while the Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson has said that if the Kremlin was found to be involved, the UK would offer a robust response, whatever that means. Today, an emergency COBRA meeting is taking place at Whitehall to discuss the suspected poisoning. And as you might already know, COBRA meetings are usually held after terror attacks to work out an appropriate government response. So what would a response look like? Joining me now in the studio is LBC's political editor, Theo Usherwood. A robust response, Theo, like what, not going to the World Cup? I mean, it shows you how few diplomatic levers there are to pull.
There are two responses, if you like, going on here. Firstly, Boris Johnson, Foreign Secretary, yesterday when he accused Russia of being a malign influence and raised the possibility that British dignitaries may not go to support the England team at the World Cup in the summer, because, of course, it's been held here in Russia. And that has enraged the Kremlin. But on the other side, and this is a little bit more secretive, certainly low-key, there is the Home Affairs response. What's actually been done on the ground, both in Salisbury and Wiltshire, where Sergei Skripal and his 33-year-old daughter, Yulia, appear to have been poisoned, and what this then relates to in terms of the intelligence services and then the links with Russia. And this is being done on a much more low-key, as I say, basis. Home Secretary today chaired COBRA, the Emergencies Committee, which is, as you say, usually convened in times of national emergency, whether it's terrorism or severe flooding, or that's usually what it's reserved for. But this is deemed to be so serious, the possibility that there could be Kremlin involvement in this poisoning, that the Home Secretary convened her top intelligence chiefs, her top police officials, police officers, and experts to find out, get a briefing on exactly what's going on. And that will go up to the Prime Minister, Theresa May, in due course. The Prime Minister, for her part, was very, very cautious in the House of Commons during PMQs today, simply confirming that there had been this meeting of COBRA.
To go back to the kind of options that the UK government has at its disposal, if the Russians are found to be involved or suspected of being involved, you know, what can they realistically do? Is sanctions an option?
Sanctions are an option.
Are we influential enough? Can we do that?
Sanctions are an option. And of course, there are sanctions already in place against Russia. But that's at a EU level. Needless to say, that's actually been pushed at that level by Britain, introducing, economic sanctions. And they've had their effect. But in terms of military options, one would presume that's, an impossibility at the moment.
Who are
we going to attack? But there are those who are saying, Sergei Skripal was part of a swap deal. He lived under his own name. His name was on the electoral register. He was supposed to be in the clear. This wasn't somebody who was in hiding. This wasn't somebody. Obviously, his life is fairly low. He lived a fairly low-key life, given what he did as a spy and double agent. But the idea was that when he came to the UK, because there'd been a swap with 10 spies going the other way back to Moscow, that he was in the clear, that he would be able to live a relatively normal life. If this is a state-sponsored killing, and, there were a state-backed killing, this, according to some security experts, really changes the game. Really actually, it really ramps it up. Because if we're now saying that anybody who's part of a deal, well, Russia could come back at a later date to exact, whether it be revenge through these sort of attacks, that's significant. Because this was supposed to have been...
It changes the basis on which you agree to these deals,
exactly.
Because you don't trust that it's done and dusted. I suppose there's also a question around whether Britain had a responsibility to look after these people, throughout the rest of their lives. And that is a question that will now be asked, I suppose.
But going back to, the original point, is that by going into this deal...
Yeah, you'd think they were
safe. You'd think they're safe, that they wouldn't need protection because they are part of that deal. That is, they become, off the grid. They're not part of any other machinations.
I suppose the problem with not reacting or taking action against Russia, if they are believed to be the ones behind it, is that it then you think gives them a license to do whatever they want in whatever country they want. There is no comeback.
Well, the Russian Parliament voted back in 2006, didn't it, to allow extrajudicial killings on foreign soil.
Indeed.
And the British government and Theresa May, you know, there have been questions asked at various meetings with journalists in Westminster. There have been criticism raised, questions asked and criticisms voiced that following the poisoning of Alexander Litvinenko back in 2006 at a London hotel, there wasn't enough done in terms of reprisals against Russia to say, you can't do this. This is unacceptable. And that we were too weak in that scenario. The allegation with these 14 deaths is they've been simply pushed to one side because the British authorities do not want to investigate them because it would open up a Pandora's box that we cannot respond to because we simply don't have the wherewithal.
It does feel like we're constantly being prodded and constantly being tested by the Russians, doesn't it? Fighter planes encroaching on British airspace, warships encroaching into British waters, and this feels like it could be an extension of that. I don't know. It's obviously a tragic story. I think it's absolutely intriguing at the same time where it goes from here. Theo Usherwood, LBC's political editor, thanks very much for joining us here in the studio. Now, some of you may remember earlier last year the LBC presenter James O'Brien had paedophile vigilantes Dark Justice in the studio. The group, set up by two men in the northeast of England, track down sexual predators and bring them to the police's attention. The pair pose as would-be victims and confront the perverts when they ask to meet up, which has led to a number of convictions as a result. Well, the LBC Daily Debrief's Martin Lindsay has spent several months with Dark Justice in Newcastle and has followed a case from start to finish. We heard the first part of the investigation yesterday, in which we heard they sometimes spend up to 17 hours a day creating fake underage profiles to lure paedophiles. You may recall that one man, Brian, wanted to meet up, and this is what happened when they confronted him.
As soon as we spot him, I'll give it a quick walk past to see if it's definitely him, no mistaken identity and whatnot.
We're now approaching Exhibition Park in the heart of Newcastle city centre. Once we're parked up, Callum and Scott will come up with a plan. It's vital they get their preparation right or their cover could be blown.
So what happens now? We've got 40 minutes till he's meant to arrive. What do you do?
Mental preparation, isn't it? And just being sort of like aware of your surroundings and stuff. Luckily, we've been at this entrance before to catching of a person.
The adrenaline starts going. That's why some people are not built for this work. It's emotional and whatnot, but you can't let your emotions get in the way of you sometimes.
We're just walking to the front of the park now on a busy morning in the city centre, and we're just yards away from Newcastle University and the RVI Hospital. People are everywhere, going about their normal everyday business, and no one suspects a thing.
Well, it is. It's your average Friday morning. I mean, you can see people jogging, people going past on their bikes, you know, just going about their daily lives. People don't think that this is going to happen, you know what I mean? Like, no one's going to be sitting there thinking, right now there's someone going somewhere to meet a child. You know what I mean? But they are, and we're here waiting for them.
And then, earlier than planned, Brian has texted to say he's arriving.
People don't think that this goes on. They don't think it's happening, but
I mean, he's been here apparently, so I'm going to cater under that bridge, see if he's standing there just out the rain.
Well, Callum has now returned, and we think we've spotted Brian just over the road in front of us. We now need to get closer to make sure it is actually him before we approach.
Basically walking across the road now, over the other side of the road, you see him with a walking stick.
Yeah.
That could be him, but I'm not sure.
We think Brian suspects something. There's no young girl here, and he's now starting to walk away.
I'm just following him because I start running over. It's not him.
We're just checking the photograph on Callum's phone, which confirms it is definitely Brian. We now need to challenge him on why he was planning to meet a 13-year-old girl here for sex.
Excuse me. Can I have a word with you, please? I just want to wait here. Police are on the way.
Why?
Eh? Uh-huh. For attempting to meet a child following sexual grooming. Yes, Brian.
No.
Yes.
No.
From an organisation known as Dark Justice, yeah?
Right, yeah. Oh, I've been having a laugh with you. I know what you're going to bring up. I've been having a laugh with you, but I have all...
Been having a laugh? Is this a laugh?
Callum then shows Brian the naked photograph he took of himself and then sent to the decoy profile.
My colleagues wouldn't believe that's a laugh, would they?
Oh, yeah, well.
Wouldn't
that's
he not?
True. That's true.
Would they believe that's
true,
a laugh?
That's true, no.
Would my colleagues in the police believe
that's
a laugh?
That's true. Oh, yeah, I won't run away, pal. No, I couldn't run to save myself.
You're not going to get far anyway.
No, I couldn't run to save myself.
Brian is now apprehended while his family are in the hospital behind us. Now they call the police.
We've got him Just in case you're doing he's came to meet what he thinks is a 13 or 14-year-old girl following sexual grooming.
God, I feel sick now.
I feel horrible. I don't know why it come, because I knew in my mind.
Well, yeah, of course you did. Because right at the beginning, when you first wanted to meet, you talked about the police, didn't you?
Yeah, and you...
20 minutes then pass, and Brian gets an unexpected phone call.
Was that your wife ringing you there?
Yes.
Why didn't you answer?
Because he told us not to. She'll divorce us enough, man, so what would she want to help? She wouldn't help me, you know?
Brian's life is falling apart minute by minute. He's physically shaking and has to sit down. The police then arrive with blue flashing lights on the top of the car.
He's come to meet a child following sexual grooming.
Two officers, one wearing a stab vest, approach Brian and empty his pockets, taking away his mobile phone, which is full of evidence. Brian's arrested and walked to the police car, flanked by the officers. The next time we'll see him is at Crown Court, charged with trying to meet an underage girl following sexual grooming.
That's it now, mate.
Job done.
Well, it's another one down, innit, you know what I mean? And now it's on to the next ones.
Well, on one hand, you feel the streets are safer because of their work, but there is something uncomfortable about it, isn't there? Fascinating stuff, nonetheless. That was Martin Lindsay with that special report. And that is your LBC Daily Debrief for today. I'm Richard Suchet, and we'll be back tomorrow to give you the full story on the day's biggest news. In the meantime, make sure to hit subscribe so that you never miss your daily update. And if you've enjoyed today's programme, please do leave us a review. But of course, the news doesn't stop with this podcast. Make sure you listen to LBC on digital radio, FM in London, or online at lbc.co.uk. And we'll do it again tomorrow.